I'll give us brief snapshots of what their thinking is for this legislative session, what kind of advice they have in terms of policy for us, and hopefully we'll be able to move through them quickly enough so that we can have some give and take with you as colleagues. I'm told that we do have a quorum, and I'm wondering if Representative McFarland, if you would be so kind as to move the minutes of January 15th.
So moved.
Thank you. The minutes of January 15th have been moved. Any discussion? Yes, Representative Obermueller.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The dates are 2008 to 2009.
How about that? Wow. All right.
We actually read these once in a while.
Great. Our test worked, Celeste. Representative Obermueller moves the minutes be amended to reflect to strike 2008 and to insert 2009. All in favor of that motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Members, one of the other important things about the minutes is to make sure that your attendance is properly recorded. I'm really depending on each of you to be responsible, make sure that our staff knows that you were in attendance. I know a number of us come in and out, and sometimes our staff are not able to keep track of that. So instead of doing roll call, we'll just have staff, you know, eyeball the room. But, you know, you can imagine sometimes, you know, we can miss someone. So just do make sure if you do come in late, that you slip a note or just, you know, make eye contact with our staff so that we can properly note you in a minute. All in favor of motion to adopt the January 15th, 2009 minutes, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails. Thank you, members. First on our list of presenters this morning is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. Scott. Or rather, Mr. Kroonquist. Sorry, it shouldn't be so casual. Good morning, Mr. Kroonquist.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And you should have a handout. It's one that looks like this, the Building Our Economy by Educating Our Future, our legislative platform. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll work from that document and try to really move through it fairly quickly because I know that you'll be spending time on these issues as the session progresses. The number one item on our platform is to enact the new Minnesota Miracle, and I really won't spend time on that today. I know that is an issue that will receive some fairly extensive scrutiny later. But as you know, while that's viewed as a major education funding reform, there are major policy ramifications in that proposal as well that I know your committee will want to look at carefully, Mr. Chairman. For today, I'll move on to our next priority that we identified, our board members identified, and that comes under the heading of enhanced teacher quality. We all know that that is a critical issue. In fact, outside of parental involvement, maybe the most significant impact on student achievement is the quality of the teacher in the classroom. Our members should very much support the two-count program, and in fact, we'd like to see it expand eventually to all districts across the state. If in the interim, we need to really make sure that at least every district has access to mentoring and teacher induction programs, new teacher induction programs. That's a critical step. And also one area that needs to be addressed is to make that formula, the two-count funding formula, work for the intermediate school district. Right now, because of the way intermediates are funded, they're really not able to use that program. Additional items under that heading would be maybe looking at upping the requirements or making the entrance into teacher preparation programs more rigorous, the tests associated with teacher preparation programs and licensure more rigorous. The reality is that teaching is becoming more complex all the time. Teachers are teaching a growingly diverse student population, and so we think it's also critical that teachers are trained in the area of cultural competence. Moving on to our next heading, comes under the heading of intensifying efforts to help all students succeed. And what we focused on there was we think there's growing evidence that that the achievement gap really, probably the most critical issue there is the summer learning gap. Many of you may be familiar with the study out of Johns Hopkins University that did a pretty extensive study of Baltimore schools that in fact showed that two-thirds of the achievement gap there was directly attributable to the summer learning gap. In fact, it showed that the schools were closing the gap during the school year, and then when the students left and over the summer, the gap not only went back to where it was, but it often even widened further. And that, of course, has to do with the fact that middle or upper-income students have access to the summer enrichment camp, are more likely to go on field trips with their family, and undertake educational experiences. And so we think it's time to consider actually requiring summer school for students that are not on track to meet proficiency, and also to look at adding some calendar days to the school year. Another one associated with that is the whole issue of allowing locally elected school boards to decide when the school year should start. And that's something that we've supported for some time. Finally, our final heading, Mr. Chairman and members, is to look at creating a state center for educational leadership and research. And this is something, Mr. Chairman, we visited with you about and others. And we think it's time for the state to establish an entity that really is focused on educational research, that serves as a clearinghouse of best practices, gathers evidence-based information, data, that you, our policymakers, can turn to when you have critical issues and complex issues facing you, and you need to decide which direction the state needs to go. And I want to make clear that this is not in any way, shape, or form a criticism of the Department of Education. It's just the reality that due to budget cuts over the years, they are not able to provide this service anymore. And it's an area where we think that we really need to move forward. We think this leadership or research center could also provide better information on training school administrators. We've had the Principal Academy developed in recent years. We think we need to expand on that model, to extend it to superintendents and other school leaders, and make sure they're receiving the training they need to be effective school leaders. So I'll stop there, Mr. Chairman. I know you're going to talk later about its mandate reductions, and there's a big initiative underway there. Service sharing is, I'm sure, an issue that you'll look at, and just want you to know that we look forward to working with you on those two major areas as well. And the grad test would be another one. That's, you know, we've already had discussions about that, but we look forward to working with you to address that critical issue.
Thank you, Mr. Kroonquist. A very comprehensive list, and it's been my privilege to work with you and AMSC over the last few years, and I'm sure this committee will look forward to productive ongoing work with you.
Thank you.
We're going to keep moving, members. Mary Gilbert Dougherty from St. Paul Public Schools. Mary? Mary Gilbert? Ms. Silver, it's okay, you were talking to a committee member, so we'll let you slide.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
And members of the committee, I'm Mary Gilbert from the St. Paul Public Schools, and I did pass out these packets yesterday, and I have extras for those of you who didn't get one. I don't want to give the packet out twice, which has information about the district. And
by yesterday, you're referring to the Keatsville Finance Committee?
Right.
Yeah. I think... easily over half our members are not on that committee, so
okay.
It might be beneficial to, if you have some, we can have the page distribute those. Emily, can you do that? Thank you.
And included in the packet is, in addition to our legislative agenda, are a lot of summaries of the work that we're doing in St. Paul related to our strategic plan, our shared accountability framework, and then the annual report. It's a kind of a public accounting that we have about how are we doing on our goals. In addition to the program that we're offering in St. Paul, so it kind of gives you some information about the work that we do in St. Paul related to the policy part of education, how we're trying to implement the goals we have around improved student achievement, closing the achievement gap, graduation rates, all the things that this committee worries about all the time. So so if any of you have any questions about anything in this packet, don't hesitate to get a hold of me. Included in our policy agenda, there's two giant issues for us. One is to increase the compulsory attendance age to 18. I think Dr. Stinson did talk at any of the forecast meetings or anywhere that he's been about one of the big kind of glaring looming problems that we have for the state of Minnesota on the forecast issue is the reduction in the number of high school graduates we have and how it relates to the workforce issue and future economic cycles that Minnesota has. This committee also, in addition to the fact that there's a lot of well-known documentation about what happens to a person who doesn't have a high school diploma as far as future earning, ending up in the Health and Human Services or correction system, how it ends up being kind of an economic death sentence to somebody if they do not have a high school diploma. It used to be that you could get a GED and get into the service, and now even the minimum requirement to getting into the military is a high school diploma. This committee last year also considered some changes to the younger kids on the habitual truancy side about whether or not there could be a petition related to someone who enrolled a child in kindergarten and then became truant. And about 20% of the caseload that Ramsey County has around the, what we refer to them as baby truants, are students that are enrolled that parents are having a difficult time getting their child to school. Now, we don't want to prohibit the opportunity if a child is enrolled in kindergarten and is just not developmentally ready, you know, to allow the parent to withdraw that pupil. This would be specifically for children who are ready, should be in kindergarten, and for some reason or another are just not showing up on a regular basis, so that the county could put together some kind of case management services to help that family out, and some supports in place to help that child get to school on a regular basis. Because as you can imagine, if a child is truant starting in kindergarten, it doesn't bode very well for their future academic career. The other big issue,
Silver, the issue there is that our compulsory does not capture the kindergarten. Is there an age or is it a grade or is it both?
It's kind of complex, and I'm sure Ms. Larson could talk to you about it, but we don't require kindergarten in the state yet. It's not a requirement. However, the way that the habitual truancy statute is set up, if you actually do enroll your child in kindergarten, you know, and they're not withdrawn because the child just wasn't, you know, again, age or appropriate ready to be in kindergarten, you know what I mean? So the habitual truancy statute would come into place if the child is enrolled and for some reason that the child is just habitually truant rather than the parent decides to withdraw the student from school.
I apologize for the interruption. We will most probably get back into this issue sometime in the course of the coming week, but please continue.
And I am working with, you know, the Principals Association on that because I think the issue did arise, you know, from a principal at one of the elementary schools. The other big issue for us is, and you have a work group working on the new grad. Right now, we have about 1,000 students who haven't passed one or more of the basic skills tests. Of that group, 75% of them are either ELL or special ed, and the majority of them haven't been at the district for 3 years. Yeah, so it just kind of gives you an example of the types of kids that we're trying to move through our system that come to us. Either, and I'm not saying that they haven't been in another district somewhere, but they haven't been in St. Paul for at least 3 years. That's the group that we're working with. So having the new high-stakes grad test would greatly complicate that. And so we are very pleased that you are looking at some other alternative that would allow students who have the credits and continue to work on the remediation to actually obtain their diploma. We also have included a couple of other provisions that this committee included in the policy bill last year around kind of cleaning up the care and treatment transportation, making it reasonable for school districts, a provision regarding school closing so the district has a little bit of opportunity to work with their community about repurposing the building if it's in restructuring under NCLB. There's some additional cleanup on the care and treatment statute, and that's kind of a problem because it's been kind of amended over the years. So that if a district serves a student in care and treatment, that the district is eligible to actually receive the revenue under that provision. Right now, if a student is placed in a care and treatment facility, for instance, by the courts, because that student didn't decide to go to that treatment program, under the provision, they're not eligible for the revenue under that.
And Ms. Gilbert, I don't know if it's directly related, but apparently there's a U.S. Supreme Court review of related issues in terms of of, I think, Ms. Larson, you shared that with me recently. Unilateral placement in non-public schools and whether or not a public school then would be required to cover the cost and reimbursement for those services. And so it's not the same issue, but certainly an emerging issue and perhaps one that we might want to look at as well this year.
Right, and I, because this has been kind of amended kind of over the years, like all of the pieces that work toward that statute, you know what I mean, some of the pieces just need to be cleaned up. Another thing that we have in our legislative agenda is to amend the equal treatment law. If given our new math and science standards, we do have schools where kids who are not at grade level for their math and reading, we would like to extend the school day. Under the equal treatment provision, we would have to, if any other public or private school in the district asks to extend the day, we would have to provide it as well. And as you can imagine, that prevents us from doing anything because the cost would be prohibitive to add that transportation for everyone else. We'd also like that we would just think about reducing the sheer number of standards that are in place. As we do the rewrites on the content standards, that we look at just reducing the total number that we have in place. It would be easier for us to do the curriculum development, develop the curriculum packets, do the professional development, and it would be clear for teachers.
Ms. Gober, I'm going to rush you along a little bit here.
I'm done.
Oh, wonderful. See how effective I am?
Yes.
Thank you. I look forward to working with you and your school district in the coming weeks. Let me get back to my agenda here. Don Samuels with the Hope Collaborative. Members, Don, the Honorable Don Samuels is a notable local leader, including serving on our Minneapolis City Council. But actually, I think he would argue, perhaps more importantly, being very active in his community in terms of creating, working toward equitable educational outcomes for all students. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Ryan, and thank you to the committee and for fitting me in here, and especially to the staff for working hard to get me in, and also for the meeting we had even at the council. If you're like me, you're still basking in the glow of yesterday's achievement. Mm-hmm. America had to dispense with the old patterns and achieve the level of, I guess you could call it, divine objectivity, where we pick someone based not on the color of their skin or the pronunciation of their name, but on their ability to do the job. And that is the spirit in which I think Barack Obama himself said, the question is not whether government is too big or too small, the question is whether government works. And so I guess we're moving into an era, as he is encouraging us to move into an era, of doing what works. The question is not whether a school is a district, a charter, or alternative school. The question is whether it is producing significant improvements or very high levels of achievement. I co-founded the Hope Collaborative, which has brought outstanding public school educators and district charters to the city to share their ideas with us and the protocol of policies that lead to their incredible success. And I know Representative Mariani, you heard Mr. Hernandez, who, when he came mm-hmm. to, I think it was the Capri Theater,
mm-hmm.
to
mm-hmm.
talk about their incredible program where there's a long waiting list, even though the school started for low-income kids, the children of doctors and lawyers, and trying to get in, they're so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Hope Collaborative supports the following five ideas. Replication of outstanding charter and district public schools, and I encourage you to listen to the president's speech or the president's, read the president's website, www.whitehouse.gov, and this quote is from that website. Support high quality schools and close low performing charter schools. Barack Obama and Joe Biden will double funding for the federal charter school program to support the creation of more successful charter schools. The Obama-Biden administration would provide this expanded charter school funding only to states that improve accountability for charter schools, allow for interventions in struggling charter schools, and have a clear process for closing down chronically underperforming charter schools. Obama and Biden will prioritize supporting states that help the most successful charter schools to expand to serve more students. Well, we agree with Obama, and we believe we should expand excellence and close underperforming schools. We also want to see the conversion of state funding, that's $3 million over the last 2 years, for charter startups to state funding for district or charter groups to replicate successful schools in Minnesota and around the country. I was a businessman for 25 years in a highly competitive toy industry, so you can see how obsessed I would be with replicating success and dispensing with failure. And then item three is to allow for continued growth of charters, resist a moratorium on charters. And this is the last thing low-income, limited English-speaking Minnesota students need. As President Obama suggests, we should be expanding and replicating the finest charters. He says, the evidence is now overwhelming that if you take, well, this quote rather is from the New York Times, and I encourage you to read it. It's a wonderful article in November 26, 06. The evidence is now overwhelming that if you take an average low-income child and put him in an average American public school, he will almost certainly come out poorly educated. What the small but growing number of successful schools like KIPP, Amistad, and Yes Prep show is that the public school system accomplishes that result because we have built it that way. We could also decide to create a different system, one that educates most, if not all, poor minority students to high levels of achievement. And the Hope Collaborative also supports the examination of area learning centers, possible legislative auditor study. We must find out what is being done to replicate most effective schools, what is being done to close ineffective schools. We must ask, what is the impact of after-school area learning center money? How many students are involved, and how much does it cost? How much money is involved? And finally, the Hope Collaborative supports the examination of urban-suburban desegregation programs, which are producing significant progress. We must also ask, though, which are not. The latest evaluation of the Choice is Yours shows A at every grade level studies, that's grades 3 through 7. Students in the Minneapolis public schools made more progress in reading and made more progress made the same progress in math, and C, 62% of the students participating left the program within 1 year. Which schools are showing the most progress? We should identify them and replicate them. And I thank you for allowing me to speak today, and I hope that we can move into the future with this kind of objectivity and not be enslaved to devotion to any one system or any one project. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Samuels, and thank you for your courageous work and voice over the course of the last few years. I'm sure you've taken a few knocks during that course, but I know that you're guided by a deep sense of love and justice for all students. So thank you. Look forward to working with you. You've got some ideas here. I want to circle back with you.
Thank you, and I'd be willing to meet with any members of the committee or the staff to flesh out.
And let me encourage members to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next, Grace Kelleher with Minnesota School Board Association. Good morning, Ms. Kelleher.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every school district in the state of Minnesota. All our materials are included in a blue clear folder you have in front of you. And if you open it up, the first thing I'm going to talk about is the dark navy blue folder. As you open that, you'll find in there a sheet of not only MSBA staff members, but of our board of directors. And these should be familiar faces from around the state of Minnesota to guide us in our decision making as we try to help school districts. Also in this folder, you'll find a list of services that our organization provides for school districts across the state. I'm hopeful that this will be a reference, in fact, as we go forward in the session, if you have questions about how MSBA serves member school boards. Also in that same packet, you'll find a brightly colored list of our legislative platforms for this year. And I really want to focus in on the bottom two categories and share really sort of our feelings as we go forward. We want to support governance that allows local control by allowing districts to set a start date that is best for kids. Let me repeat, best for kids. We want to clarify the Type 3 school bus requirements, that those new requirements only apply to full-time bus drivers. We want to allow school boards to determine the best use of the 2% staff development set aside. And we oppose high-stakes tests as the only measure for graduation. And it was alluded to by earlier testifiers that this grad test is very important. We really feel this is a critical time in Minnesota history. We have, in fact, new requirements coming online in 2013, 2014 with Algebra 2 being required for the grad test, as well as a successful completion by students. And in 14-15, we have the science requirement of an additional chemistry or physics class for graduation that's going to be required. And we really need help to do that. I found on the Department of Education's website on Friday, they had a report on teacher variances. And in that, the highest number of variances were issued to math and science teachers. And folks, we really feel this is a crucial piece in the achievement gap and how kids succeed in the future is important to MSBA. And we will be supportive as we go through discussions on that, bringing some ideas forward. We also, as you look on the very bottom category, request legislation that allows for flexibility. We'd like to expand options for electronically attending meetings, removing the January 15th teacher contract deadline penalty, remove the Department of Education commissioner approval for the four-day week option for school, and expand usage of health and safety levies. As I mentioned, the achievement gap earlier is a big part of our piece, and we'd like to share with you sort of an idea we got from Alabama, and it has to do with a lending library for school supplies in science and math, and it would really be available to all districts to use, and things like graphing calculators, GPS devices, water testing quality pieces, things that really enrich those curriculums that are very expensive to hold on to, could be warehoused in the state and lent out through our lending library system to school districts so they have the right tools at the right time in the curriculum for our kids. We'd like to see a team of traveling math and science instruction specialists out there to support teachers in the classroom if they in fact have a difficult lesson, to have someone come on site with their curriculum in their classroom so their delivery methods improve for that student. Once again, trying to really enrich that curriculum and move children forward in the state. That's really all I've got to share this morning with you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity to share our concerns.
Thank you. Very concisely done, and it's a little misleading, members, because there are a number of items there that and there are a number of them are very complex. Requires some very good vetting. A number of these items, including some of the items identified by previous presenters, this committee has vetted through. Parts were present in the last policy bill from last year and the previous bill before that. And so I'm editorializing here a little bit, Ms. Kelleher, at your expense, but it is my hope that this year we'll be able to pose a significant gap between us and the Senate. Quite frankly, part of the end game has involved, unnecessary pitting of policy against policy, when in fact both bodies agree to those policies. And so there's a bit of gamesmanship here that I find a little tiring as a legislator, and my hope is that we can keep our eyes on the prize, and we certainly count on our third-party advocates to be able to constantly hold both the House and the Senate accountable to good policy. The other gap, of course, is the gap between us and the executive branch. I know a number of our members are currently meeting with the governor right now. My hope is that we can arrive at an early consensus to not fall into the same trap of leveraging one another, particularly on policy issues. And I am hopeful that we'll be able to do that. Again, we'll need the assistance of our third-party advocates for the sake of good policy to also hold the executive branch, just as it holds the legislative branch, accountable to moving forward on good common sense policy. So thank you, Ms. Kelleher. Excuse me. Look forward to working with you again this year. Members, next up is Bob Wadle from Education Evolving. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Wadle. It's good to see you again.
Well, thank you.
You've worn thank many you. Different hats over the course of my tenure here, and I'm pleased to see that one of the hats you're wearing currently is as a leader with this wonderful group, Education Evolving, that is sort of on the vanguard of some, one might say, provocative issues, but only provocative relative to the status quo. So welcome.
Thank you, Representative Mariani, and members of the committee. It's always good to come back and talk with you about the most important business that the state has, the education of our future. And just for the record, I am Bob Wadle. I am a senior associate with Education Evolving. And for those of you that aren't totally familiar with Education Evolving, we are a policy think tank, but we don't just think. We do make recommendations, and just as we have in the past, we will be working with all of you, but some of you in leadership positions to carry some of the proposals that I'll be referencing in my comments this morning. I did have a handout for you. Just briefly, I've summarized my comments in about four major pieces. One is, out of the ashes sometimes can rise a phoenix, and I think that's the situation that we're in right now. Obviously, no one likes the situation that we're in, but we're not alone. The rest of the world is sitting around tables like this and wondering how on earth do we get out of this situation. So it does provide an opportunity to move forward, to do things differently. We do know that when times are good, it's very, very difficult to make changes. When gasoline was under $1 a gallon, it was very difficult to somehow provide incentives to create a car that got more miles per gallon, for example. So when times are good, when there is as the headlines read in the year, I think the 2000 or so, when we had boatloads of money. Remember Pam Wheelock's statement? We have boatloads of money. What on earth are we going to do with it all? It was very difficult to do things differently, to do things innovative. We don't have that situation in front of us today. It's an imperative. We've got to do things differently. Just as the Federal Reserve can't cut interest rates any lower, they're at 0%. They can't cut interest rates to support the current banking system. School boards cannot cut budgets any more in support of the current education model. It's an imperative. We've got to come up with some different ways
to deliver our education system. First, what not to do. It's always tempting to circle the wagon. Don't do that. The auto industry in the 1970s, many of you were probably in elementary school at that time, their first reaction was raise the tariff on Japanese cars so that Americans can't afford to buy them. Well, Congress didn't do that, and also make sure that we don't increase the miles per gallon. That was another proposal of the auto industry in response to that crisis. So, rather than asking for incentives to make cars better, which of course our auto industry grudgingly has now been trying to do, try to protect what we had. That's not the solution. Resist the push to make students attend the schools that we have because we have room in them. Resist the attempt to cap chartering. What to do? First of all, provide incentives for making learning better at the same or lower cost. Better learning at the same or lower cost. And this is the opportunity to think differently. And Minnesota has done that over the past 20 years. The post-secondary enrollment options is a good example where, but the stroke of the pen, the lines were blurred between high school and post-secondary, and hundreds and hundreds of new learning opportunities were suddenly made available to juniors and seniors. No more teachers had to be hired, no buildings had to be built, no school buses had to be bought. More learning, and actually it cost less. When post-secondary options was enacted, it cost less to send children to college than it did in the high school. That's just but one example. Open enrollment was another example. Kids could go down the road, gain access to new learner opportunities. No more cost. Greater opportunity. We've been hearing a lot of discussion about the RTI model, the response to intervention model. You go to Representative Tim Faust's school in the St. Croix River Education District, where they're really implementing that model for the past 10 years. Kids get help right away when they need it. They don't have to wait to fail and get eligible for special ed. They get the help right away. They're learning right away. And the incidence of the kids in LD programs is cut in half. Better learning, reduced cost. Chartered schools are serving 30,000 kids. Many new models of schools that we don't have anywhere else. All at lower cost. Every single charter school operates at a lower cost than the excellent district schools that we have. Don't stop those kinds of opportunities. There are any number of examples, Mr. Chair and members, that we could look at this. Minnesota has done a good job of looking at how to do things differently. We need to do more of that. And there'll be proposals to do just that. Another example is to improve the professional job of teaching. Richard Ingersoll, who spent some time with us this fall, professor at the University of Pennsylvania, has been studying teachers for 10, 15 years, says to upgrade teacher quality, there's a lot of discussion on how do we get better quality teachers. To upgrade teacher quality, schools need to go beyond just holding teachers accountable. They need to give teachers more control. And he studied, as I said, the teaching profession, been surveying and researching the teaching profession for decades. Not just in teaching, the research shows that the degree of power and control that practitioners have over the workplace decisions is one of the most important criteria distinguishing the degree of professionalism and the status of a particular occupation. Want to make teaching a better job, then we need to better define and give the teaching profession greater accountability, greater responsibility and power over the profession of teaching. We really don't have a recruitment problem in terms of getting teachers. We have a retention problem, and we need to look at that. About half the teachers or people that graduate with teaching degrees get hired, and then about 5 years later, about half of them are gone. We don't have a recruitment problem. We have a retention problem. And maybe what we need to do is really to create a better job for teachers. And we have one of our recommendations is to really tweak the current site decisions law. And use what we call giving school boards and teachers choice too. It's not just parents that have choice. School boards and teachers have choice too in terms of the kinds of schools that will make available for the children, the kinds of opportunities that teachers have. So tweak that site governance law to drive new school creation. Let the power.
I'm going to move you along. Although I suspect you're near the end, but
okay.
I do need to move.
Okay. In conclusion, then, one of the major initiatives that we need to do is to create new kinds of schools for more and more of our kids, not just the ones that need the ALC schools, and we need area learning center schools, but some of the high flyers and some of those that are kind of in the middle can really improve and enhance their performance with new and different kinds of schools that will be able to be developed by our teaching, by our teacher force. Just one last comment, Mr. Chair. Some people say, well, what are those schools going to be? And we would suggest let that innovation bubble from the site, from our professional teaching force. Henry Ford said, "If I had to predict ahead of time what kind of car I would have made, and ask people what I should have done, they would have said, make a faster horse. Let's let our teachers develop and identify the kinds of new learning models that will really make our kids soar. I think we'll see some wonderful, wonderful examples." Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Wadle. And members, as you can tell by the testimony, an engagement with Dr. Wadle and Education Evolving is a process of pushing out into the frontiers of some provocative, innovative, complex issues having a lot to do with how we do things, which is obviously kind of one of the challenges across our entire society as we face the current crisis that we do face. Thank you, Dr. Wadle. Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I appreciate the opportunity to meet with you this morning. I'll probably be a little bit quicker. Woke up with a bit of a migraine, so I'm going slow.
We can bend the lights a little bit.
Yeah, it would be helpful. Just as a little quick background, the members of the Minnesota Business Partnership are the CEOs of the state's larger companies, employing a little over 2 million people worldwide and about 400,000 Minnesotans. And since the partnership's inception in 1977, education has been one of our top priorities for the basic fact that a well-educated citizenry is key to our ability to compete in the global marketplace, and as a result of that, as well as to build upon our quality of life in Minnesota. So education has been at the core of what we do since our inception. I thought, just as some broad background, I just mentioned that our education committee, when we get together, we use a goal and four basic principles. And our goal is that Minnesota high school graduates will perform amongst the best in the world. That's our bottom line. That's where we want to be. And the four basic principles that we follow when we look at education issues and try and come up with our objectives The first objective is that it's appropriate for the state to set statewide expectations for student achievement. That we should have a goal for all kids. And there are a number of reasons for that. One is that so we're ensuring that all kids have the same set of expectations of them, wherever they are, and that all kids will, when they graduate, be prepared for success after high school. So one is set the expectation for where kids need to be. The second guideline is it's appropriate to measure student progress and report that on a public and uniform basis. The public needs to know that. Policymakers need to know that. If we have these expectations for where kids need to be at the end of their high school career, we need to track their progress. And one of the things that that allows us to do in addition to following where kids are is it allows policymakers, schools, and districts to identify student performance trends as well as best practices. And then, ideally, to transfer those best practices where needed. The third principle, very similar to what Mr. Wadle described and others, but that schools should have the flexibility to educate the kids as best they see fit. If the state can set the expectations and focus on how kids are doing relative to that, we should let the professional educators figure out what's best for the kids they serve. Every school is going to be different. Every set of kids is going to be different. And yet every year it seems the statutes get a little bit thicker. So if there's some mandates that we can help other groups try and remove to free up schools, those are certainly things we'd like to do. And our fourth principle is that families should have the option or the opportunity to find the educational setting that best meets their needs. And the fourth and the third principle pretty much mesh together in the sense that all kids learn a little bit differently, and really all teachers teach a little bit differently. And to be most effective, what we need to do is try and allow those matches to occur between learning and teaching styles. To customize our educational services. So again, those are our four principles. Just set the expectations, measure progress, give the professionals freedom, and then also allow families to find the services that best meet their children's needs. And then lastly, I've just mentioned briefly, and it's something that hopefully we'll be able to follow up with you and the committee on in a couple, 3 weeks, but over the last year or so, the partnership has partnered with the Itasca Project. And as part of that initiative, we've been able to engage McKinsey & Company. And really what we wanted to do was a three-part process. One was to identify internationally what are some of the best top-performing K-12 systems and what are the things they do that allow them to be successful. And McKinsey has tried to put that together in a bit of a matrix. So that was the first thing. Who's the top performing and what do they do that allows them to be successful? The second is we wanted to try and take Minnesota's K-12 system and overlay that on that matrix. Find out where we match up well, where we have some gaps. And then the third thing is based on that analysis is where are some 3 to 5 things that we could really focus on a long-term basis, that if we made some changes and became better aligned to international best practices, that ultimately our student success could be improved. So those are the 3 things. We're nearing completion of the project, and we're somewhat anxious to meet with you to talk about it. The 3 areas broadly that are starting to emerge out of that. One is how can we ensure that we continue to have the best teachers possible in the classroom. This will be especially important as I'm sure all of you have heard the reports. We're going to have about half of our teachers leaving the classroom over the next several years. So this is while it's unfortunate for us and probably fortunate for the teachers that get to retire, but this is really a big opportunity for the state and the schools, and we need to make sure that the schools have the opportunity to hire the best teachers possible. A second area that we've been looking at is how can we continue to develop principal school leadership development capacity. The role of a school leader and a principal obviously is very key to how the whole school functions. And then the third area involves the effective use of data. What do we know about how kids are doing, how well schools are doing, and are we making the best, most effective use of that information? Again, everything is driving, how can we do the best that we can so students succeed? And again, ultimately, to get to that goal, that our kids will be amongst the best in the world. And again, we hope to have that fairly well complete in the next 3 to 4 weeks, and look forward to the opportunity to share some of that with you as well. But we appreciate the time to meet with you this morning, and have always appreciated your willingness in past years, and we look forward to work with you again this year.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. It's been my privilege to work with you over the course of the last several years. I look forward to much good work this year. Thank you. Stacia Smith? I'm sorry, Roger Aronson. I'm keeping in order here, Carlos. Roger Aronson with the elementary school principals, secondary school principals, and also with the Minnesota State High School League. And Mr. Aronson, on the first one, you and I just like, we hug each other. In the second one, we tend to kind of bump into each other. What's up with that? Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Roger Aronson, and I represent the elementary principals and the secondary principals in the Minnesota State High School League. I want to say a couple things about the group. The Elementary Principals Association is about 600 members throughout Minnesota. The Secondary Principals Association is about 1,200 members. When we say principals, that's principals and assistant principals. And we have statewide organizations. Our president, John Heeman from Underwood, is president of the Secondary Association, and Dick Oscarson from Lakeville is president of our Elementary Association. Joanne Knuth is the executive director of the Secondary Association. Her daughter is a member of the House, Kate Knuth, and her husband's a former member, and her brother's a former member, so try to work for somebody who has those types of legislative contacts. And then Fred Storty is with the Elementary Association as the executive director. I might say that from time to time there's another organization, the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. They're a little more high media profile than we are, but they're a separate group from us, and you'll hear them separately. Sometimes the principals say, well, wait a minute, we're not part of the school administrators, we're part of the school principals. So they say on the front end, if you have some questions about the school principalship or how the principals operate in your schools or other schools, feel free to give us a call, and what we want to be is value added on those levels. The High School League as well, I've represented since 1986 here, and we'll talk a couple. I'm going to give you a couple ideas about things that they're interested in, and that is true. The High School League does tangle with issues here at the Capitol from time to time, but I think overall we work them out pretty well and have had a pretty good history. The secondary principals have a very keen interest in resolution of the issues about the math grad test. And this is a big issue with the membership right now. We've appreciated the informational hearings that have taken place on this so far. We're tracking that closely. We think this is we're aware of the kind of pull and push on whose issue is this. Is it the departments? Is it the executive branch? Is it the legislative? But it is a problem, and we need to have this. Have this solved. I've talked to principals who've expressed significant concern about the potential of basically flunking thousands of students who don't do probabilities and statistics and algebra 2. And as I think every speaker says, there's a lot of probability that we would all flunk, or a large portion of us would flunk probability, statistics, and algebra 2. Another piece, and it's small because it seems a rather simple fix, but we really want to have this fixed both with all three organizations, and that's the Type 3 school bus issue. I mean, that passed last year, and it extended some bus driving requirements far beyond what was intended by the authors of the bill. I think Representative Ward has a bill to help fix that. It's been heard in the Senate as well. And as soon as you can hear that bill and pass it, Mr. Chair and members, the better. I might say that this seems like a small thing. But because of this extended licensure requirement, it posed significant problems for us in student councils, where the advisors are transporting the kids in the sports that have golf and tennis and some of the smaller sports, that the coaches wouldn't be allowed to transport these kids without having the more significant license. It was well-intentioned, but its grasp went pretty far. A couple of things, too. Last year, we had a bill on the Tennyson warning, and it was heard in this committee, and it was passed and went off to judiciary as well, and as happens with a lot of bills, I mean, it wasn't, what I'd say, uniformly welcomed by everyone, but we want to come back with that and talk about that, Mr. Chair, and see if we can't make the folks that object to that, make them happy, and see if we can't move that along. And Representative Dabney had that last year, and it's made some progress in the Senate as well. On the elementary side, our elementary principals say, if you can do one thing for us, give us some relief from testing that's occurring out there. One of the things we'd like you to watch for is there's been a lot of discussion about changing the child custody laws. And when custody, legal custody, joint custody, and those issues change, this is a big issue in elementary school, of which parent gets to come to conferences, which parent gets to pick up the kid, when the district school gets instructions about don't let him take her home, and these kind of questions. So if I'm sure a lot of you have heard some discussion about some changes in joint custody and legal custody and physical custody, and we'd say that if those do occur, it would be helpful to discuss those in this committee at some point. I know that you don't like dragging those bills around too much, but there's some big school issues on the elementary level. One of the things about the lobbying community that we don't talk a lot about when you give us this group here is that we talk to one another quite a bit. Years ago, one of the chairs of this committee, Representative Merritt, actually came and stood in the back there and said he wanted to see what was going on back there during the committee and what everybody was talking about. The groups do a pretty good job of sharing information and jointly working stuff out even before it gets to you. That's Ms. Gilbert telling you that she's told me that she wants this other piece fixed, and those of you that haven't dealt with Mary, she's not kidding when she says that. But I think that's a real good thing, and keep that in mind as you listen to the stuff that's coming here, you know, from the table. I mean, obviously we agree with the School Board Association about the late school start. We have some issues about, the secondary people have some issues about the compulsory attendance statute, that if you raise that to 18, we need some flexibility to deal with some 17-year-olds who aren't ideally suited to being in the classroom. And if those kids are failing for the last semester of their school, they're not going to be helping anybody if there's a legislative mandate that says that they have to stay in that classroom. So when we did this last time, we had some proposals for you about how to move that around and give us some flexibility in terms of dealing with those kids. We have sent legislative platforms to you under separate cover, and you'll see those. And they also list all of the members on our on our legislative committees. I hope you'll take a look at those. You'll see some of your principals that are on those lists as well. Those folks are good resources as well. If you have questions about something, feel free to contact them directly. One last piece with the High School League. The High School League, just for the committee's information, this committee has a significant jurisdiction over the league. When bills are introduced, they typically come here and we talk about them here. The league doesn't get any state funding. They're an independent group, and while they're a private nonprofit corporation, there's significant legislative regulation of the league as well. Their membership, the open meeting law governs them, the Data Practices Act governs them, and some other issues as well. I think that you'll find that the league does a pretty good job of managing issues so they don't end up here in front of you as legislation. The chair of the Finance Committee, Representative Dreiling, bemoans the fact when the league ends up here with legislation. We try to avoid that as much as we can. We've got some issues that we're dealing with out there this year in the league that we're trying to do locally, shortening up some seasons just because of the economics that we're currently facing, and we process that stuff pretty thoroughly. We have a 24-member board, and then we have our representative assembly as well. Another thing that we've talked about and we visited with the Finance Committee a bit yesterday, and that's that transportation costs are very, very expensive and there's an inequity about them. If you have the urban part of our conferences have very short distances for the schools to travel. But in rural Minnesota, the distances are very, very long and they're very expensive. And it creates a burden on rural school districts that is inequitable. It's not equal to what happens. And I used the example yesterday, some of you heard this, but my daughter went to Minneapolis Southwest. They had one trip game and they went to North Branch. It was a big deal. It was the only travel of more than an hour that they went on all year, whereas kids that are in anywhere from Nashwauk to McGregor to Worthington, these kids are traveling hours to get to their contests, and there's a lot of cost to that. So we propose that we might, I know it's short money this year, but we want to look at as much as we can in terms of trying to equalize that. Finally, with both principal groups, you heard some discussion prior about staff development. We have a marvelous staff development program that's housed at the U for school principals now called the Principals Academy. We've had significant support both from the executive branch and from the legislative branch and from other groups as well for the continued support of that. It's an excellent model. We've been really pleased with that, Mr. Chair, and we hope that we're able to continue that. Mr. Chair, thank you very much.
Thank you. I look forward to hearing more about the Principals Academy. And Ms. Aronson, it has been my pleasure to work with you over the course of the last few years. You seem to take on some of the toughest assignments, so I don't know what that's all about. Maybe they'll give you a reprieve this year, but it looks from your list
I don't think any of us have a reprieve this year, Mr. Chair.
Yes, indeed. Thank you. Stacia Smith, is she Stacia here? Stacia with Smith with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the committee members for hearing me out. My name is Stacia Smith. I'm with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I see a lot of familiar faces and some new ones. I look forward to meeting those of you who are new to the committee. The Minnesota Chamber of Commerce is the largest business advocacy organization in the state. We've got over 2,700 members around the entire state. About 40% are in greater Minnesota, 60% in the metro area. And 80% of our members are small employers, which is about 100 employees or fewer. So from the business perspective, workforce is one of our top priorities. Minnesota businesses are competing in the global economy, and our workforce must be prepared to world-class standards. We must strive for all students to meet these global standards. We've all heard people say that it's just not possible to improve achievement among the lowest performers. Cultural and linguistic differences add to the challenge of teaching, but they are not insurmountable. Schools are proving it all around us. We're looking at schools around the country that are closing the achievement gap. One example is the Knowledge is Power program, KIPP, and we have a KIPP school in Minneapolis now, thanks to a waiver that allowed them to come in. 80% of KIPP students are low-income, 90% are African-American or Latino, and despite these challenges nationally, more than 90% of KIPP middle school students have gone on to college preparatory courses, and more than 80% of KIPP alumni have gone on to college. Their method is to use an extended day. KIPP students are in school for longer days, weeks, and years than other public school peers. Other models such as Yes Prep schools in Texas are finding the same results with a similar model, despite their disadvantaged backgrounds. Yes Prep students are competing with the best students in the country. They are enrolled at colleges such as Duke, Columbia, Cornell, Wesley, Notre Dame, Rice, Yale, Penn, so on and so forth. It can be done, it is being done, and if they can do it, then we can do it better in Minnesota. The business community is committed to closing the achievement gap and helping all kids reach worldwide standards. One Minnesota law stands in the way of bringing these results-oriented charter schools to Minnesota. Our law requires 50% of charter school boards to be teachers from that particular school. And KIPP and Yes Prep are kind of like franchises, and they've developed a system that is uniform and has worked everywhere else. They want to locate in Minnesota, but they can't because of our board model. So the Minnesota Chamber supports changing our law to encourage those results-oriented charter schools to come to Minnesota. Our workforce meeting worldwide standards will also be discussed at the legislature reviews the science standards this year. The most recent available data from the Trends in International Math and Science Study suggests that the performance of Minnesota students in mathematics has significantly improved since the implementation of statewide standards. However, our scores in science have not improved as much. and the business community, the Department of Education, and others have joined to work together with a national TIMSS expert who is helping us identify how Minnesota's science standards differ from the best performing countries around the globe. This information will be available in a few months, and we support using this information to help revise the state science standards. We think that implementing focused, coherent, and rigorous standards will result in better student achievement and an improved workforce. We also think that the education funding system in Minnesota is currently unsustainable and unproductive. For the 06-07 school year, the state provided approximately 79% of the total cost of elementary and secondary education. Every 2 years, school boards sign teacher contracts that often consistently outpace the level of state funding provided. As a result, districts conduct levy campaigns to encourage their community to compensate for that gap in funding available from the state and the committed expenditures from teacher contracts. Given this system of funding, no amount of state money would ever be sufficient. And despite the significant increase to K-12 funding, districts will continue to rely on local levies. Therefore, we support the concept of mandating binding arbitration contracts between teachers' unions and local school boards. Binding arbitration will allow a district board to refuse unreasonable cost increases without facing a strike or negatively affecting their superintendent. School districts must claim responsibility for their budgets by balancing state allocations and local contract agreements. Lastly, I just want to mention that last year the growth model was a rather controversial issue, and during the interim we were happy to work with the Department of Education and key stakeholders to reach a model that we could all agree to. I think we've now reached a consensus, and as last year, we do support growth models that measure student progress against state standards. Sufficient progress must be made so that all students must master state standards before graduation. And just one final note, the Chamber would also like to prevent any kind of tab on charter schools and retain current open enrollment to allow student choice and improved learning. So if any of you have any questions or would like to work on anything with me, I'd be happy to talk with you. Thanks for taking the time to listen to me.
Thank you, Ms. Smith. You've covered a lot of ground here, and a lot of that ground we've obviously have worked on over the years. I look forward to doing that. And again, members, I would encourage you to be in contact with any of these and all of the individuals and organizations that are presenting here today. You will only benefit from that engagement. You don't need to follow their lead, but engaging with them is always a good process, a good thing to do. Next, we have Charlie Kite with the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And as Charlie comes down, I'll fess up, Charlie, that you and I walked into the building together, and I asked Mr. Kite whether his testimony was ready, and he said, I think you probably put it together in the last few minutes. So, I'm only teasing. Welcome, Mr. Kite.
You're also supposed to correct. I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And about half of this committee is also on the Finance Committee. And I'm going to overlap a little bit with what I said yesterday in some testimony, but then I am going to hit on ultimately two ideas that I think are reform ideas that also fit more in the policy realm. Yesterday I said that I referenced the fact that the last time we were in this deep of an economic problem, I believe, was 1981-82. You might remember that Governor Quay was the governor at that time, and I, at the other end of my career, was a first-year school superintendent. I actually had hair and a mustache then because I was trying to look older, because I was in my early 30s.
You'll have to bring a photo next time you...
It's a photo I am trying to hide from the world. But it was a very difficult time, and there were five additional special sessions, ultimately, and cutbacks, and we found ourselves laying off a lot of our friends and neighbors as school superintendents, and it was just a difficult time. But I remind myself that 2 years later, we were still educating the children of Minnesota, so we got through it, but it was not easy. I'm going to make a couple of points about investments because the third of these points does direct itself towards this committee.
And Mr. Kite, I apologize. I am going to rush you because I'm looking at the time. We have two other folks, and so we're really going to have to stick to 5 minutes.
Okay, and I will be finished in
Thank you.
Three. Thank you, Mr. Chair. First of all, schools need, based on the rules that we now operate in, about 3.5% new money each year. That's negotiating tightly, watching your dollars. That's about what you need. So we're sitting here with really three macro possibilities in front of us as we look at this session. One is that the legislature finds 3.5% more money each year, as hard as that would be. A lot of that work will be in your finance committees and your tax committee, because it means raising taxes. A second is to not be able to provide that money, say to the school districts, continue operating in basically the same box of rules that you're operating in now, which means that we will go back and we'll first of all decimate all of our fund balances, and secondly, we will lay off hundreds, if not thousands, of people over the next 2 years, both adding to the unemployment ranks, but also ruining programs and making less education opportunity for our kids. So that's a district decision that might have to be made. The third is to significantly change the rules. And that really lies more with the policy committees. It also is the most upsetting and difficult of all of the choices, because all of the rules are put together by folks who care deeply about what they say. You've heard testimony today about some of that. You've heard about maybe rolling back mandates and so forth. Those are some of the rules. I'm going to identify two things that I think would be worthy of looking at. One, frankly, in an indirect way, costs money, and the other one is a reform idea. Our observation has been that for the last several years, everybody around education has recognized that there should be more of an investment in early childhood education and in more kindergarten. If we could deliver 7-year-old children into our first grade programs ready to learn, a lot of things would be better. And we're stuck. We haven't found the money. I think, candidly, we, persons like myself, have kind of watched the Senate and the House sort of duke it out back and forth, and there's all kinds of competing interests about what should go first. Here's an idea. Possibly, we should be looking at saying to the school districts of Minnesota, we give you the authority to make a modest levy to simply pay for early childhood education, all-day kindergarten, and get on with it. When we look back 2 years from now, there's going to be very little that you all or we are going to be able to do that's positive in education. Wouldn't it be nice in 2 years from now if we could look back and say, we accomplished one thing? And what this involves is giving authority to the local districts. They would have to levy, by our calculations, roughly $100 per pupil unit in their systems, and you could cover most of these needs. And we could all just stop arguing about it here and just get on with the business of educating our young kids. It's one idea. Second one, maybe more controversial, and I'm going to say this in a very respectful way. It may be time for us to study through some process that the legislature designates, some process of what we call post-tenure reform or post-tenure review. When I say that, I say it respectfully. Our teachers work very, very hard. It's a demanding job, and frankly, it just wears some of us out, administrators and teachers. We may want to bring all the parties together to look at if there is a way to do some kind of peer and supervisory review to help, and help is the important word here, our mid-career teachers stay sharp and productive, because it's easy to slip into not being sharp and productive. And I don't say this as a suggestion of saying, let's go out there and willy-nilly try to get rid of teachers. This is more of a process of trying to help people through maybe a little bit of tough love, but also a lot of support to stay on top of their game. That's something that you could take a look at as a policy idea. It would really involve study over the next year and maybe coming back next year to it. Mr. Chair, those are the suggestions that we would make, and I thank you very much for the time in front of the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Kite. Not insignificant suggestions, and ones that I'm sure will engender some passionate discussions here. I look forward to those and working with you.
Thank you.
Mr. Graffel, Jim Graffel with the Minneapolis Public Schools. Morning, Mr. Graffel.
Mr. Chair, members, I had my testimony prepared last night, all typewritten. Just want to put that on the record. My name is Jim Graffel.
These different groups are not competitive at all, members.
We like to have fun. We better have a little fun this session as well. My name is Jim Graffel. I represent the Minneapolis Public Schools, and the beauty of batting cleanup is most of it's all been said. I just want to touch on a few things lightly, and then I'm going to wax a little philosophic and see if I can erase the Charlie's suggestions from your memory.
And Mr. Graffel, you'll have about 4 minutes to accomplish that feat. So.
I want to commend the committee on its work on the growth model. I want to, that was excellent work. We supported that. The next challenge you'll face with that is it's clear that the governor is going to want to try and connect that to teacher compensation, and I want to caution you on making that connection. I think testing, you know, you have more than one tool in your toolkit. In Minneapolis, we have not supported the use of one measure linked to evaluate student performance or school performance, and we don't think it's appropriate to link it to teacher compensation. I think that's coming down the pike. I think one of the things you need to accomplish this year is solve the grad test issue. There's been a lot of good interim work on that, and I commend you to continue to work on that. I think we want to move away from high-stakes testing as a graduation requirement, and we have probably goodwill, means, opportunity, and motive to do that, and I'd be happy to work with you on that. Along with St. Paul, we support increasing the compulsory education to 18, notwithstanding Mr. Aronson's objections to that. I want to now go on to, we're going to have a discussion about integration this session. Mr. Chair, you had a great conference on integration. We're going to be talking about finance, and we should talk about policy. I think we really need to have a revisioning of what integration should look like in the state of Minnesota. And I can tell you, in Minneapolis, we have a lot of experience. And one of the things, we went from a forced busing policy as a first integration strategy to a parent choice strategy. Mm-hmm. And what we're finding in Minneapolis and in other areas of the state, that parent choice can and does lead to segregation. And we want to ask ourselves, is that something we support? Is that something that we tolerate? In that integration discussion, we have some pony and cart issues. Are we going to get the policy right and then solve the finances? Are we going to be working on the finances without revisioning the policy? I know we have a task force that Mr. Newton's, or a working group that Mr. Newton and Representative Brown are going to be working on. I think these are some questions you want to ask. And, you know, on January 21st, 2009, it was important in the last couple of days to review that first march on Washington in 1963. That was about poverty, and I know we had a commission, Mr. Chair, on ending poverty. I think one of the integration strategies was about addressing those issues of long-term poverty. And, you know, clearly we haven't solved that problem yet. And ultimately, I submit that it's not going to be a... Schools alone aren't going to address integration, housing, transportation, transit, employment. These are, if we only task schools with this mission, as we have for the last 54 years, 55 years, then I think we're not going to make the progress we need to make on that. I want to go to just one thing with Dr. Wadle, who is a good friend and a former colleague. When Dr. Wadle says charter operate with lower costs, every charter school, I want to remind you, actually to their credit, charter schools generate as much revenue per pupil as any other school. The difference is it's a labor cost issue. So, and when I say to their credit, it's not that charter schools are skimming and creaming the easy students to teach. They're teaching a population of students that looks just like the students at Minneapolis schools will educate, sometimes with similar results, sometimes better results, sometimes, as Mr. Samuels testified in the Choice is Yours evaluations for 2 years running, a max sample of Minneapolis students are outperforming students in this Choice is Yours program, which for new members is a result of the NAACP lawsuit against the city of Minnesota. How am I doing on time, Mr. Chair?
You're over.
All right.
I guess we know each other well. We can read each other's signs.
I used to say to people, just say three things, courtesy and exit stage left. It's just too tempting. The parting thought would be, we're probably not going to see a reauthorization of No Child Left Behind in this year, but No Child Left Behind represents a significant federal direction to public education. At the same time, we're deregulating from the bottom with choice and charters and everything else. This policy committee is going to have to wrestle with the tension that creates, and the fulcrum or focal point of that tension is the public labor relations framework that we exist with. So when Dr. Wadle says charters operate at lower costs, they operate at lower labor costs. The question you're going to have to ask yourself is, are we deregulating choice? Are we deregulating labor? Are we deregulating integration, segregation? Where you have a leadership role, be happy to talk with you more about that, and I'll curtsy and exit stage left. Thank you very much for your
Thank
time.
Thank you, Mr. Grasswell. One of our more thoughtful colleagues here, you and I go back way back, and I look forward to continuing working with you this year. Finally, Dan Augblogger from Education Minnesota. Members, we're going to go over just a few minutes, so please hang tight. And while Ms. Augblogger gets seated, let me just say that we will not be meeting tomorrow. We will meet on Tuesday, where we will be hearing from ACHIEVE, a national organization. The commissioner has arranged for this, and this is part of our evolving discussions around high-stakes testing and specifically around the emerging problem and issue with the grad test. Ms. Allsworth, you get to lead us home here over the course of the next four minutes.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dan Allsworth, Education Minnesota. And as most of you know, we're a member of over 70,000 educators. Our members are teachers in the K-12 system, early childhood, also the education support professionals and custodians, bus drivers, parents, and also the two-year college faculty. You know, there are a lot of management groups, and you've heard from a lot of them, and then there are the workers, and that's Education Minnesota. So I sometimes think that, well, there's 7 or 10 of them, I could come down here 10 times and say things 10 different ways on some issues, so that we get equal time. However, for the most part, the education lobbyists work very, very well together and see eye to eye. I started out with a short list until some of them testified and my list got a little longer. But I'll keep it brief.
We'll have other opportunities to talk
about it. We do appreciate the discussions that we've been having about the graduation test, and we heard the House, the Senate, in a joint committee, and also the Commissioner of Education say that there's a problem with the grad test, and we think that something should be done very soon. If it's not done soon, then we will end up going, it'll cost money as they go forward with some of the test work. So we think that that's possibly a cost-saving instrument. If we could repeal the grad test and get a task force in place to figure out what should be done and report back to the legislature. We also support a flexible school calendar. So any repeal Labor Day start would be good for our local communities and making decisions about what's best for kids there. Achievement gap is another issue that we think is needs to be addressed as well. And I want to just tie it really quick to mandates, because when we talk about repealing some of the mandates, you have to ask yourself what happens to some of the quality of the instruction and the quality programs for kids. And I'll come back to the mandates in a moment. But extended day programs, summer school programs, things that help kids be successful are very important. So now I'll get right to the mandates. There is a list of mandates that has been distributed to all of you. I just want to make it clear that Education Minnesota was not a part of that discussion group, and that we are very eager to talk about mandates that really aren't needed in our schools. But you also have to ask yourself, how much money are you going to save if you get rid of some of these mandates? You're not going to save very much at all. What you are going to do in some of these mandates, though, is shift the burden from the school district right onto the teachers or the workers. Because some of these mandates, I'll give you just a little example. I mean, on the list of mandates to repeal, possibly, or to consider, is teacher duty-free lunch. Well, you know, many teachers only have 25 minutes in their teacher duty-free lunch, and 8 minutes of that is taken up by dropping the kids off at the cafeteria, and another, you know, few minutes picking up their kids at recess. And so I kind of chuckle when I hear this, and how can you save money? I mean, and that doesn't even probably count a bathroom break in it. So when you think about these mandates, ask yourself, what are we doing to the educator's plate? Because some of these reforms or some of these mandates will still be expected. I heard a lot about staff development, not so much today, January 15th. But I really appreciated Bob Wadle's comments, Mr. Wadle's comments about you know, quality teachers and giving teachers control. That really, staff development really is helping teachers make decisions along with the school district about what's important. There is flexibility in the staff development law, so you do not have to repeal that. District after district after district has reduced the amount of money that they're spending in staff development after discussions between the school board and the teachers. They have gone from 2% to 0%, 2% to 1%. It is working. Let's go on to charter schools.
We're going to have to wrap this up, Ms. Falsberg. Okay. I do apologize. We have another committee that's ready to pounce on these chairs.
Okay. I would say that in terms of charter schools, the startup costs are significant, and we need to find money, so examine those. The Type 3 school bus bill that's going through, we greatly appreciate. Compulsory attendance that is mentioned today, going from 16 to 18. If you are going to do that, you need to make sure that there are resources in the schools so that our teachers can educate those kids who are now deciding to stay in, and also the remainder of the kids who are already in class. Binding arbitration, we feel, is an issue that gives great authority to management and no say to the employee group. We do have a couple of reforms that don't necessarily affect this committee that we think could be a significant cost saving for school districts, and that would be statewide health insurance for school employees and having a decent pension plan so people could actually afford to go out at a decent age or a lower age and save the district money when they hire a brand new teacher. So that's my shorter version.
Thank you. I know you have many more things to do, but there will be other opportunities. Members, I want to thank you for hanging around. Obviously, a lot of common themes. We have a lot of work ahead of us. Look forward to seeing you all next week on Tuesday. Until then, this committee is adjourned.